Welcome to SEC Unfiltered, home of the best SEC content on the internet. The following is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is the simplest fantasy game on the market, focused around prop total entries. You pick 2 to 6 players, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks has no sharks, optimizers, or mass multi-entry guys. It's literally just you against the projection. They also allow mixed sport entry. So, for example, you can take the over on LeBron, parlay with the under on Mahomes. They've got college sports, pro sports, literally anything and everything you can think of. They have got it over at Prize Picks. They also have a slick, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They're rated 4.8 stars in the App Store with rave reviews as well. Guys, so many fans and listeners of SEC Unfiltered have made tons of money with our friends at Prize Picks, and you should as well. So again, go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Be sure to check them out and tell them that Chris from SEC Unfiltered sent you. Let's get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Talking all things SEC football with former LSU Tiger and SEC legend Jacob Hester. He's also the host of Off Campus on Sirius XM College, and also Off the Bench with our good friend T. Bob Herbert. Also does work with a good friend of the show, Chris Doering, on pre-gaming the SEC. He's everywhere doing a ton of stuff. Jacob Hester joins the show. Jacob, what's going on, man? Appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely, man. I've been a fan of what you do for a long time, following you on social media and stuff. And so I'm glad I can finally hop on the show. I just noticed I have a lot of shows that are off. Maybe I need to be on a show or something. I don't know, Off the Bench, Off Campus. I don't know. I guess we make it work, but maybe I need to look into that.
No doubt. I was thinking too, it's the off season, so maybe it goes with that team. But I wanted to first, Jacob, start and say this, and I'm sure you get this a lot, and I promise I'm not trying to make you feel old, but I'm in my early 30s, and for many of us, when you talk about SEC legends and favorite SEC football players, and I know that quarterbacks and receivers and those guys kind of get all the glory and glamour, but I swear you were one of those people in my childhood that every time I would cut on the TV on a Saturday, it was like death, taxes, and Jacob Hester is getting this handoff on 4th and 1, and he's getting a first down. So kudos to you, and I tell you, it was just like every time, it was foolproof. You need a first down, There's Jacob Hester on that fourth and short. So you were a lot of fun to watch, man. It was a good time. Those were some fun battles. I remember watching the LSU-Florida, you guys facing Tebow. I mean, some legendary games.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you noticing the running back position, because it's been a little devalued, certainly at the professional ranks over the last couple of years. But yeah, I mean, it's been a long time ago now, but it does seem like it was just yesterday. And I love the LSU-Florida rivalry. I hope that never goes away. I know it might be in jeopardy of going away, but just so many great games. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of one that is kind of in that lore of a game that has a name attached to it, the fourth down game, right? Because like all great games, they usually have a name attached to it. So yeah, fourth and one, that was, I got to give a shout out to my dad. That is a mentality. My dad's a Marine, city policeman for like 35 years. And so if I would not have picked up any of those fourth downs, I would have been terrified to disappoint my father and see his look in the stands, because we worked on that a lot growing up.
So Jacob, let's talk current day SEC football. This is the latest action coming out today when we're speaking. Chris Lowe with a great piece on ESPN.com. Conversations with Nick Saban, which I thought were really, really eye-opening, and we all kind of assumed, you know, everybody's trying to figure out, why did he retire? Why did he hang it up? The current climate of college football, I mean, it felt like that was probably one of the reasons. Nick Saban had this to say to Chris Lowe, though, quote, "I thought we could have had a hell of a team next year, and then maybe 70 or 80% of the players you talk to, all they want to know is two things. What assurances do I have that I'm going to play because they're thinking about transferring, and how much are you going to pay me? Our program here was always built on how much value we create for your future and your personal development, academic success in graduating and developing an NFL career on the field." He also went on to talk about the players in the locker room after the loss to Michigan, and maybe guys aren't taking the losses quite as personally because, you know, the game isn't quite as personal or local because of NIL portal. Your thoughts on the comments from Saban? Are you surprised in any sort of way? And then, Jacob, also your thoughts on where we are in college football right now and where we're going.
So for Coach Saban, I was fortunate enough to play for Coach Saban in my early LSU career. I was recruited by Coach Saban, and he is the best recruiter that I've ever seen. He told me straight up exactly how my career was going to play out. And when I start to hear him say, you know, different things about people were worried about other things than like maybe getting on the field, and they were wanting promises, like, I know that is not something he jives with. That is not going to be something where he was going to enjoy moving forward, you know, kind of in that climate, because he, for me, like, he was pretty upfront. Like, I had never played fullback before in my life. I was coming from Evangel Christian, where we were like five wide. And I was like, if we ran the ball, I just happened to be that guy. He's like, no, hey, here's how I see your career working out. You're going to play fullback for this. You'll transition to running back the last 2 years in college. And like, he laid out the plan, but it wasn't like a promise. It's like, I'm not promising you any playing time. And so I can understand Coach Saban not being a huge fan of that. And when you look at like high school recruiting and what Coach Saban was so good at, like, it was the relationship that he built throughout recruiting. And you can do that a little bit still in high school recruiting, but you can't do it in the transfer portal. And I've had conversations with Coach Saban, right? And the thing that I think, and I say he's the best recruiter that I've ever seen, is because he knew every detail of you. He knew exactly where your strengths were, where your weaknesses were. If he brought you on campus, what he was going to have to do to make you the best player possible. And he would have conversations with the assistant to the assistant coach, right? He wanted to know he had conversations with the athletic trainers, with the equipment managers. How is this person to you? How does he treat you? Like, he got all this information, and then he decided, okay, is this someone that would work within our program? Well, you can't do that in the transfer portal. It is speed dating. It is like, look, I've been with my wife since I was 17. People tell me this. It's like, you know, the swipe right, swipe left. I don't even know which one that is, but that's basically what the transfer portal is, right? I mean, you got to quickly go through that thing, and you're trying to decide, is this player good enough to play in my program? But also, is this player someone that's going to be good within our locker room? And I just don't think that he enjoyed that, because part of his strength was getting to know every single aspect of who you were and who you were going to be. And you can't do that in the transfer portal. And so, again, like, it doesn't surprise me that that wasn't something that he liked. Now, I don't think he was like stuck in his ways and stubborn. Like, he would change with college football. He certainly has done that over time, be it We need to go high tempo offense. We need to do certain things to make us competitive on and off the field. Like Coach Saban would change with the times, right? He wasn't like we're looking at Dabo Swinney at Clemson right now, right? He's reluctant to change with times. And Clemson, who was a standard of college football for a long time, is falling farther back with each year. I still think they're a good program, but they're not where they were. And a lot of people want to see Clemson, you know, kind of move forward with everyone else. And so I don't think that was Coach Saban, but I just don't know if he enjoyed it as much because he had done it for his way for so long. It had worked for him. And then you couldn't do it that way. You were still successful because you're the greatest of all time, but it just wasn't the way that you've done it. And you've been okay to change, but how much is too much change? And so like to go to the second portion of that question, I am all for players making money off their name, image, and likeness. I am all for that. But I also can agree that guardrails, you know, hey, here's what it is. Here's what we're all going to follow because different states have different rules for NIL. They have different rules at the high school level. They have different rules at the college level. And that is tough. Like if you're looking just at the SEC, there's 16 teams from a bunch of different states. And so if I'm playing for the same thing, which is an SEC title, and this, you know, Texas has different than Louisiana. Louisiana is different than Missouri. Missouri is different than Florida. Like that's something I wish we could all kind of come together, put some guardrails in place still for the player movement going forward, but just have a better idea of what the rules actually are. And then everyone actually play by the same rules.
Jacob, doesn't it feel like we're moving closer and closer to the SEC, maybe the Big Ten as well, breaking off from the NCAA and, you know, that turning into sort of a professional footballer? Like you mentioned, the guardrails, I don't think we're going to be sitting around, you know, waiting on the NCAA to do something. We know that we'd probably be waiting forever. It feels like Greg Sankey is really the leader of this new movement and that it's going to be sooner rather than later that college football and what we knew it as is going to be completely dead.
Yeah, the NCAA is the governing body that doesn't govern. Like, so if we're sitting there and we're waiting on them to do something, we're going to be waiting for a very, very long time. And I'm not even saying that I'm in favor of this, but it does feel like it is going to be an AFC, NFC, and it's going to be SEC, Big Ten. And that's what we're going to get. Now, what teams are in the SEC? What teams are in the Big Ten? How much does it grow? I don't think we know that. Is it going to get up to 25 teams per conference? Maybe it does. I don't know. Like I never speak in absolutes in college football anymore because a conference that I grew up watching, you grew up watching in the Pac-12 is just gone. Like it literally doesn't exist. You can say it does with two teams. We all know it is not. I mean, that is not the Pac-12. That's not the Pac-10. That's not the Pac-8. That is two teams right now that eventually will go play in another conference. The ACC right now, I don't know where they're going to be in 10 years. We have teams on the Pacific Ocean that are now in the ACC. So like where it's going, I don't think we can ever just close the door on anything. And I don't know where those teams live. But the SEC and the Big Ten, we know that whatever the top level is, it's going to be those teams. And you mentioned Greg Sankey because he's not sitting around and waiting. Like Commissioner Sankey, if he sees something going a certain way and he knows it's inevitable, well, he's going to get there first. And so whatever it is, he's going to be on the forefront of it. And again, he is not going to wait around. And so if it turns out in 3 years, that's the model that we have, I don't think anybody would be surprised because we're start talking about 14 team playoffs. Well, it's like, okay, the SEC and the Big Ten, they're going to get this. We know that for sure. They're going to get more than everybody else. And are we sure every other conference is just going to be okay with that? Or are they going to want to do their own thing as well because they don't feel like they've been invited to whatever the biggest level is? I mean, it's a lot like I'm a big soccer fan. So it's a lot like European soccer, right? There's the EPL, there's the championship, there's League One, there's League Two, there's different tiers, and you can play your way into the Premier League, you can play your way into the championship, you also can find your way out of the Premier League in the championship, and you can continue to go down until there's no more down. So do we get to a model where we have promotion, relegation? I don't know. I don't know what the model is going to be, but I do know that the SEC, whatever that model is going to be the top dog with the Big Ten, and they're going to kind of set that model.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Jacob, you mentioned there's no absolutes in college football. There is an absolute in Baton Rouge. That is year three of the Brian Kelly era await, and it's a big year for LSU. We all know the expectations are high. I think they're pretty clear-cut, Jacob, with this ever-changing landscape. Texas and Oklahoma now coming into the league. You lose Jaden Daniels. You lose Malik Nabers. The defense obviously needs to take a major, major step forward. I think they did a great job in hiring Blake Baker, who I think was one of the best DCs in the SEC. What does Brian Kelly need to do in year three to satisfy the appetite of the LSU fan base? Because you and I both know coaches are getting less and less time to prove themselves at their stops, and it was a great year one for Kelly. Last year, I think, somewhat of a disappointment because of that defense. Year three is kind of the year where most folks look at and say, okay, this is where you really tell us who you are. What does Kelly need to do in year three in your mind?
I think if you ask Brian Kelly the same question, he'd give you the same answer that I'm going to give you: make the playoff. It's the almost bare minimum is to make the playoff, right? Last year, you had a good team. It would have been great if you would have had any defense, but you didn't, so it was just a good team. You had the best offense in the country, but the defense was so bad that it held you back. You still won 10 games, though, and you finished 13th in the country. So you were right there on the verge of getting into a playoff if you would have had it this year with a good team. Right. And so, like, how can you go from 13 to, you know, at least 11? Like, how can you find your way into the college football playoff? Because that is the standard. At a place like LSU, in the last 20 years, you've won the second most national championships outside of Alabama. Right. Other than that, I mean, you still have more than Georgia. You have more than Ohio State. You have more than Florida. And so there is a standard that is incredibly high. And again, I think Brian Kelly would tell you that's where it needs to be. LSU should be a place where a new 12-team playoff, every year you should expect to be in it. Now, there's going to be some years, maybe it's 7 out of 10, and I think people would be okay with that, but that has to be the expectation. You've won 10 games each year that you've been at LSU, and you're right. Year three, right, wrong, or indifferent, that's where you kind of get graded the hardest, right? Look at Billy Napier in Gainesville. He's going to get graded on an incredibly hard scale because he might have the hardest schedule that I've ever seen the final 5 weeks of the season, but it's year three. So we're going to grade you incredibly difficult. So Brian Kelly would tell you they got to make the playoff. I think the team, when you look at some of the pieces that they have, yeah, they're losing three first round picks on offense, but Garrett Nussmeier, he is someone that you just don't see in college football anymore. He is somebody that waited his turn. Like, he's been at LSU since Max Johnson was the starting quarterback for LSU. He's been there a long time, and he's got the talent to start almost anywhere in the country, but he waited his turn. He's gotten game action against some really good teams. He's shown you flashes, and then he gets a chance to start a bowl game. He goes and leads you on a 98-yard game-winning touchdown drive. People are excited about Garrett Nussmeier in Baton Rouge, and you've got a ton of receivers. You get a transfer down from Liberty that was an all conference player. He was on a lot of All-American lists as well, like honorable mention. So he's a really good player. You get now Kyron Lacy is going to be receiver one. You get a Mississippi State transfer. And so it's going to be a rebuilt offense, but the offensive line is going to be key. I mean, you have the best left tackle in college football, in my opinion, in Will Campbell. Emory Jones is a top 10 tackle. You return most of your offensive line outside of the center position, so that's going to be your strength. And then how much can Blake Baker, who I'm a huge fan of, he He used to live like four houses down from me. I mean, I love Blake Baker. How much can he improve that defense? Because there is some liabilities on the roster. There are some spaces where you don't have a lot of bodies. You look at the defensive line interior. You got like three or four in spring practice right now. So how much more can he improve that defense, knowing that they're going to have to probably wait another recruiting cycle to get the personnel that they want to get in? But you spent a lot of money in the offseason. You brought in Bo Davis. You brought in Corey Raymond. You brought in Kevin Peoples. I mean, you spent a ton of money and resources because you looked at the roster and knew you're probably a year away on that side of the ball on the coaching that these players are going to get. So you completely overhauled everything on that side of the football. And I think with the offensive weapons that they have, if the defense can just be 55th in the country and not 105th, and then we're talking about, you know, a potential 10-win regular season LSU team and then a team that can make the college football playoff. And so, again, we started this question saying that should be the standard, and it should be the standard every single year.
And you mentioned for teams that the college football playoff is the standard, college football playoff or bust. I think this year, certainly one of those is the Ole Miss Rebels. Jacob, are you buying the hype on Ole Miss after what Lane Kiffin and company have done in the transfer portal?
I am. I think that Lane is doing things they've never done in Oxford before. I mean, first 11-win season a year ago, it's consistent now. Now, I know they had a big fall off a couple of years ago where they lost, I think, was it five of their last six games. But to come back the next year and kind of solidify yourself, that was huge. You get Jackson Dart back. We all know that that is going. You got the quarterback and you know what he is, and you got him coming back moving forward. That helps so many different problems. But you've also done a really nice job in the portal, not just adding to add, but adding pieces that you felt like you had to take the next step from a New Year's Six kind of bowl game situation like they were last year, 11 wins, all that, to a true contender to not only, you know, win a national championship. Ole Miss, like, they never got to Atlanta. Like, they're trying to get to Atlanta and compete for an SEC championship and then national championship, right? So there's still things that they have to do in their program, but they are certainly heading in the right direction. And the question's always, like, when you add that many pieces out of the portal, how do they all come together? How do all of these different pieces? Because, look, we have seen great players from other conferences, even really the same conference, come to a new place and it just doesn't work out for whatever reason. I'll give you an example going back to LSU. Omar Spates, linebacker, came over last year, right? I am able to talk a lot of Pac-12 over on off campus, right? We cover everything. And I watched so much Oregon State tape from that defense. And he was on the field against Caleb Williams and USC. And they lost, I think it was by like 3 points. But he flashes one of the best players on the field in that tape. I kept going back, who is this guy? Who is this middle linebacker, Omar Spates? And then he kept flashing and flashing. He was an all Pac-12 first team player. He goes in the portal. It's LSU or Alabama. He chooses LSU. I'm fired up. I'm like, this guy is going to set the defense. He's going to be right there in the middle, all SEC player. And by the end of the year, he got replaced. He wasn't even a starter. Now, he dealt some injuries, but you never saw that Omar Spates that you saw in a Beaver uniform and a Tiger uniform, because you just don't know. It's a new locker room. It's a new scheme. It's new people around you. And so you have to be a little cautious when you're talking about the transfer portal. But here's the thing that puts Ole Miss kind of in a different category than that for me is the retention. The retention of their own players that they had coming back, because they already had a lot coming back. You lose a Judkins to Ohio State, that's a loss, but you get a Logan Diggs who knows the SEC. He was a really good back for LSU a year ago. So, like, even guys that they lost, I thought they did a nice job of replacing, and the portal stuff is great, but it's the retention of their own players, guys that decided not to go into the portal, guys that decided not to go to the NFL draft, and that's why Ole Miss fans should be excited for maybe heights that they've never been to before.
Jacob, I feel like Tennessee and LSU are in similar positions from the standpoint of, and I think what makes it so exciting, we all have differing opinions on the college football playoff expanding, but in years and maybe which we're saying, okay, these teams can put together maybe nice 8 or 9 wins, maybe they crack double-digit type of seasons. Now, all of a sudden, these are college football playoff dark horses, or at least contenders, if you will. When you look at Tennessee with Nico at quarterback, you know, replacing Joe Milton, I think the optimism is sky high. You look at what he did in the bowl game against Iowa. Your thoughts on what Josh Heupel's built there, what he's building, and obviously with Nico taking over. And again, that front seven, also a lot of it coming back. Things shaping up to where Tennessee could be similar to LSU. And I think they've probably got similar expectations where they still believe, even after a rocky what, decade plus run for them that Tennessee should be a program and a brand in that 12-team playoff every year.
No, it's a great comp because them and LSU, like when you look at some of the places where they're really strong, you look at some of the places, maybe they need a little help. Some of those are similar. You look at even the quarterback situation. You've got a guy that you haven't seen start a ton of games, but you're so excited from the small sample size that you've had that you think he can be the guy. Now, for them, they think that Nico can be more consistent than Milton, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. Like for LSU, it's a little bit different because you just had the Heisman Trophy winner, and then you've got a young quarterback, so you don't know how much better it can be. But for Tennessee, I think people think it's going to be much more efficient than it was this year. And then you take a look at their schedule. Right. And same thing for LSU. I think it's a great comp. You look at LSU's schedule, sure. Like it's SEC. We know what it's going to be. You're adding some teams, but both avoid Texas, which I think is important because Texas looks like they're going to be one of the best teams in the country. Oklahoma is going to be good, but they're not going to be what Texas is. And so that's always kind of a check in the positive column if you're looking at some of these teams that may be a dark horse, like you said, for the playoff. You get Alabama at home. You get Kentucky at home. Now you got to go to Georgia, but you like how their season ends. Mississippi State and then at Georgia, but then you get UTEP and then you go on the road to Vanderbilt. And so like if they're going in the right direction, and let's say because it is a new system, let's say they have two losses, right? And Georgia's the second loss. Well, you know that you have very winnable games to close out the regular season. And if you end the season 10-2 at a place like Tennessee, you're going to have a fantastic shot to get into the college football playoff. And so I'm a big Josh Heupel fan. I think last year was a step back for them, but I don't think it's going to derail what they're doing. I think they've got the right people in place. And look, the expectation of a place like Tennessee is just like LSU. Like LSU and Tennessee this year and most years, like they are kind of right side by side with what the expectation is, but the teams kind of mirror each other this year as well. So I think Tennessee, LSU have a chance. Would I say that they're the favorites? No, I would not. I mean, I think there's at least two teams that are going to be ahead of everybody. I think Georgia, when you look at Ole Miss, they're going to be two of the top teams. Everybody doesn't really know what to do with Alabama just yet. But, I mean, Kalen DeBoer, all he does is win football games. But Tennessee, LSU, whatever that next tier is, I think they'll be firmly in that next tier to make a playoff push. And if they made it, nobody would be surprised.
Jacob, you mentioned Alabama. Let's talk that really quickly. And I think what's interesting, too, is you know, like you mentioned, Nick Saban recruited you. You played for Nick Saban. Then, of course, he goes to Alabama. So I'm sure it's one of those things for you where you love the guy, but it's like not sad to see you hang it up when you're beating LSU every other year and kind of that one thing, that one figure standing in the way of more wins or more titles. And, I mean, I've talked to LSU folks, and they refer back to that, what was it, 2011, I think, national title game, the rematch, and like that's
right.
The most painful. Like, so Nick Saban has been the cause of a lot of pain for LSU fans over the years, which is kind of ironic. But now it's a new era in Tuscaloosa. Kalen DeBoer takes over. Like you mentioned, it's interesting because DeBoer did great things at Washington. And you look at the roster. I think I heard it was third in blue chip ratio. They still have one of the most talented rosters. But
yeah,
to your point, nobody really knows what to make of them because it's almost like that magic sauce and that luster is now gone. So can Alabama overcome it and still be one of those top teams in the league? I think that's the big question.
Yeah. Like you mentioned. One day I'll come back on and we'll talk blue chip ratio because as a former two-star recruit, I've got a lot to say about blue chip ratio. So one day, bookmark that, we'll come back and we'll talk about that. But they do have a talented roster. I don't think that they've been so depleted. And I know that initially there were so many people in the portal, but a lot of times when you get a new coach, that's the case. That's why Michigan, you know, hired from within. Now, I think Moore is a really good coach, and it was the right hire, but they made a move knowing that they wouldn't have this mass exodus because they already had a mass exodus to the NFL draft. And so, like, you make different decisions for different reasons, but Alabama did. They had a lot of people leave the program, and that is going to happen. They also brought in some nice pieces. And Kalen DeBoer, like I said earlier, the guy's a winner. He's 104-12 in his career. And NAIA and people, like, try to hand-wave them, like, you realize he was playing with NAIA players as well. He didn't have Division I players playing at that level. So he had players on the same level and literally like just went out there and mowed people down. And then he goes and he's successful as a coordinator at Indiana. We know that he was successful at Fresno State. He was at Washington. No matter where he goes, he wins football games. And it's going to be different. Like I've had a chance to really get to know him covering their playoff run last year. His demeanor is not Nick Saban. They are never going to be confused for the same person, right? So it's going to be a lot of new there, but this is somebody that has figured it out literally everywhere he's ever been. Will it be to a level where if they don't win a national championship, we're shocked like it was for the last 17 years? Probably not, right? I think the only coach in America right now that could even get to that realm is Kirby Smart. But that doesn't mean that Alabama can't be highly successful. They can't be a constant college football playoff member. It doesn't mean that they can't be a team that, you know, let's throw like Ohio State. It doesn't mean that they can't be what Ohio State's been over the last couple of years, always in the conversation. And I think they will be. I think Kalen DeBoer has done a really nice job. Kane Womack is somebody that I respect a ton in this profession. Going to get him from South Alabama to be your defensive coordinator. You get multiple head coaches from multiple places to join your staff, right? And Ryan Grubb's a huge loss. There is no way that anybody can say that that's not a huge loss, but you hire from within. You get somebody on your staff that's been with you at Indiana. He's been with you at Washington. And look, you're Kalen DeBoer. You're going to be coming up with a lot of the play design yourself. And so, yeah, there's questions like there hasn't been over the last certainly 16 years outside of Coach Saban's first year in Tuscaloosa. But again, he'll answer a lot of those questions and they'll be competitive. They'll be a top 10 team most of, if not all of the season. And I would be surprised if they're not in the college football playoff.
Jacob, let's pivot really quickly because you mentioned Kane Womack coming over was a former head coach and now was a coordinator. We saw Sean Elliott go from being the head coach at Georgia State to the tight ends coach at South Carolina. What's your thoughts on the way that the coaching profession we've seen? I mean, Chip Kelly was probably the most notable, right? Was the head coach at UCLA.
Yeah.
Now they go see at Ohio State. You know, I think there's some that obviously want to push the panic button and say that being a head coach, guys don't want to be head coaches anymore. What's your overall thoughts on that? Is it big deal, little deal, no deal that we're seeing these sitting head coaches leave for coordinator and position coaching jobs?
I do think it's a big deal. Is it going to, you know, completely change the game? I don't know. Like, will we have more head coaches do this that have been in this game for a long time? I don't know. Is this a 1 year thing? Maybe so. And I say it's a big deal because I think these coaches just want to be ball coaches. They just want to call plays. You can't do that anymore. I know we still have some that are holding on to it. You got your Lincoln Rileys. You have some that are going out there. I'm trying to, you know, Lane Kiffin obviously is heavily involved. You got a couple. Norvell at Florida State is heavily involved. You have some that are holding on to it, but year by year by year, like Ryan Day is the most play caller of all time, and he gives it up, right? Because he realizes you have NIL, you have collective meetings, you have all these different things, right? And like Mark Stoops told me this in spring meetings last year. Like, he's like, I'd love to call the defense, right? Like, there was a point in my career, I'd love to be out there and be the defense coordinator. That's how I got into this game. He's like, you can't do it. Because as soon as you're game planning, you get a knock on your door. Hey, we got that meeting. Or, hey, we got that collective situation. Or whatever it might be. Because you're dealing with so much more now as a head coach, you can't give the game plan the respect that it deserves. And the ones that are still doing it, I don't know how they're doing it. And I talked with a coach that was a defense coordinator in a Power 5 conference last year, and he said, we meet more about NIL and collective than I think we do football, which is wild to me, and that's probably the case in most places. So if you're a head coach, how can you do all of those things, go to the touchdown clubs and everything that you have as your responsibilities as the head coach, and then give the respect to the game plan? You almost can't. So I think it's a situation where Chip Kelly, look, he wanted to call plays. He wanted to get away from everything in UCLA, and we know the deficit that they're going to, all those things. Same thing kind of probably with Elliott. He's in a good position. He's in a good standing, but he's like, you know what? I just want to be the tight end coach and coach that group and coach football. And so I think that's really what it is. Like, some of these guys, that's what they want to do. That's who they've always been. They don't want to deal with the extra. We call that lanyap here in Louisiana. They don't want to deal with the lanyap that comes with all the new in college football because they just want to get back to coaching kids.
Jacob Hester, one of the best in the business. Jacob, last thing before we get you out of here, when you look at this 2024 season, we got a ways to go, right? Spring ball is currently taking place. We got spring games upcoming next month, which it's crazy to think, right? Like, the season just ended and now spring games are here. Is there a team you look at, looking ahead, again, way far ahead, 2024 kickoff, is there a team that you feel like is underrated or undervalued, or we're not being, you know, not being talked about enough? Of course, we're talking about Georgia. We're talking about Bama. We're talking about Ole Miss. But is there a team, or maybe there's a couple of teams, but is there one you lock in and say, this is a team that you better watch out? They're going to be a great story. They're going to be a contender in the SEC this year that nobody's really paying attention to.
Yeah, and it's one that went to a New Year's Six bowl game a year ago, the Missouri Tigers. Like, we just assumed that that was a one-hit wonder and not something that can come back and replicate what they did a year ago. Now, I will raise my hand and tell you I am biased towards my guy, Eli Drinkwitz. I absolutely love him. Some of the best conversations that I have with coaches is with Eli Drinkwitz. But they've got Brady Cook. They've got Luther Burden. Really, the entire receiver room is really, really good. And, yeah, they lose Cody Schrader. They lose some key pieces. They lose Blake Baker and that defensive staff. I do understand that. So they have to replace those guys. But Missouri, to me, still has enough coming back. They also, they're doing things in high school recruiting that they've never really done before. Like, Missouri just got a top five overall player in the country. They have some added benefits when it comes to NIL from the high school ranks in the state of Missouri. They're the only school that plays at this level in the state of Missouri. It has some really good high school football in the St. Louis area, other areas of the state. So they could use that to their advantage. And I think they've got Kirby Moore. I think he's one of the best up-and-coming offensive coordinators in all of college football. So for me, I look at Missouri, yes, they have to replace some NFL guys, but I thought they did a nice job of replacing them, some through the portal, some through the high school ranks, and maybe it's not exactly what it was a year ago, but that's a team that is going to compete every single week. They're going to beat some of the big boys in the SEC, and they've got a lot coming back, enough for me to think that they can be in the conversation of a top 15 team. And even though, like, these way too early top 25s, they're in those top 15s, it doesn't seem like anybody's giving them credit. They kind of like eye roll it and they're like, oh, they'll be out by week three. And I just don't think that's the case. I think Missouri will be right there in the conversation. They will be a team that, who's to say they can't be on the same level as LSU and Tennessee, some of these teams that we have right there in that next tier under a Georgia and maybe an Ole Miss.
Jacob Hester, again, one of the best in the business, does fantastic work. Jacob, I mentioned top of the show, everything you got going on, but let folks know where to find you and just everything you guys are doing on a daily basis.
Yeah, so every single day, Central Time, I do a show 7 to 10 a.m. with T-Bob Hebert off the bench, and that is a regional kind of Gulf Coast show. So we talk a lot of LSU, a lot of Saints, a lot of Pelicans, a lot of different things, all things SEC, of course. And then every single day from 2 to 5 Central over on College Sports Radio, Sirius XM Channel 84, I host off campus, and I have a different co-host almost every day. We got former Florida State quarterback E.J. Manuel, Bobby Carpenter, former Ohio State linebacker. We've got Matt McCall, right? Former Florida basketball assistant, was a head coach at UMass. We've got Chris Budden, sideline reporter for ESPN. We got a ton of different Chris Doring does once a week with me during football season as well. So we always rotate, kind of keep a new face there in the co-host chair with me. And we do that again every single day over on Channel 84. And then pre-gaming the SEC, where we try to get you ready for every single football weekend with Chris Doring. You can check that out on YouTube as well. So, and you know, trying to find a way to get five kids to baseball, soccer, basketball, football practice every day.
Jacob, you're the man. I appreciate you taking the time, and let's definitely do it again soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate you asking.